Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast from the International Motorsports Association and Radio Show Limited.
It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
So this is the 8th full course caution. Shea Adam has been speaking to United Autosport down in the pit lane. Contact, something gone awry, Shea. What happened to Tom Gamble? Horrible look, whatever's happened. They were leading the class.
Nope, the car just stopped is what the team said. And I've just made my way down to performance tech, so I'll figure out what's going on down here too.
Thank you, Shea. Well, cruel look, Jeremy, for a team that was, I think, third position rather than leading. I was rather confused by seeing the 0-1 car. They had led that class. They'd been around the sharp end of the field for quite some time. And even under tour, not a flicker of light. Performance Tech, I think, has gone on to a tour as well. Or is that on a flatbed down there? Again, it's a very dark part.
It looks like a tow, John. And yeah. I don't think they're related.
No, I think you're right.
But it could be that they are related in terms of the... I was just about to say that maybe they're both related, but different in terms of the LMP3 have an issue potentially.
So Shea, Adam has now spoken to both the teams. Shea, what has Performance Tech told you about their problem?
Exactly the same thing.
No way.
Warning, no indication. The car just died. They can't even talk to their driver though, because of course the radio shut off with the electrics gone. Bye-bye.
Uh-oh. Right, okay. That serves me right, doesn't it, Jeremy? For speaking about how reliable these cars are.
Yeah.
That is the strange... I mean,
identical moments.
Quarter of a mile of each other, if that, on the circuit?
Yeah. And within seconds of each other as well.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
Ah, well...
Glad to hear there wasn't an incident there. That's good news.
Well, now we have got some power to the United Autosport car. They've got their...
He'll have maybe bump-started it on behind on the toe.
Possibly. He's certainly got the...
I can only assume it's a battery/alternator issue, and then maybe the alternator stopped... Yeah, that's the one, Jeremy.
A batterator.
Maybe the batterator stopped charging, and then they were running on the battery, and then obviously it just shuts down. It just drained everything, and then you got nothing.
And the batteries on race cars, of course, are very, very small indeed. They're not meant... Even these cars where you do stop the engine and restart them sometimes, but they're not meant to run for... any distance, and they tend to be as small and as light as they can be because, of course, it's weight that you don't want to have.
Yeah, absolutely. It's obviously all hypothesis at this stage, but in actual fact, if they could get it in and get it working again, it might be one of those things where you just do a full reboot, change the battery, or not even change the battery, just start it up, get the alternator running, and then suddenly it could just go again and not happen. Sometimes you have that strange things happen with these cars. Unlike your road
Unfortunately, he's got a lost several laps. I think he was on the lead lap. He'd got himself back on the lead lap, I think, as the other two contenders in LMP3, which is led by number 74 car, number 30. They're about...
He was leading at the time it happened
apart,
to him,
I think.
No, I think he was sitting in third when it happened. He had been leading.
Maybe a while ago.
Yeah.
But a quick note here as we see pit stops. Number 48 team, Jimmy Johnson, was doing a really nice job there. He was hanging on about 4 seconds behind the rest of the cars, but he lost a total of maybe 2 seconds through a 20-lap stint. So hats off there to Jimmy Johnson.
Shea Adam, let's head to her for some pit stops under yellow flag. Not the first time we've said that this weekend.
No, it's not. And the Tower Motorsport car, very close to the LMP2 competition that it's actually coming up against. And I'm back down here saddled with the LMP3 machines. We've got the 74 Riley Technology car in the pit lane from the lead of the race. No driver change here, I don't think. That looks like they just have the door open to give Scott Andrews a drink bottle. They are doing 4 Michelins, though. And those, they are stickers. That's going to be treacherous out there. Not even scrubbed rubber. Waiting on the fuel. Drinks bottle has been removed from the car. Yep, there was a nice big straw on there. Just waiting on the fuel, still waiting. Oh, it's such a long time. There we go, now. Wow, beautiful burnout to get some heat into the Michelins. They leave first of the LMP3 cars that came onto the pit lane. Second to that category was the number 30. We did not see the Core Autosport car back in yet, but I do want to see it because it's been a little while.
Ollie Jarvis has just sent us a message a little while ago after the klaxon of a Morelum certainty went off. Ollie Jarvis saying, thanks, that's the kiss of death there from Jolly Morelum. Hi, Ollie. Nice driving today, mate. And be back in the car, I'm sure, before the end of the race. Dave Alcock says, don't tell me the P3s are installing Windows updates mid-race. They'll be stopping all around the track soon. Nothing worse is that when you're dashing to do something and you fire up one of your computers and it says, installing update. And half an hour later, you're sitting tapping your fingers when you're trying to do something.
63% done.
Oh, yeah. All been there. Happened to me this morning, actually, when I was firing things up prior to our coverage of warm-up.
It'd be really interesting to see in this if any other LMP3s have the same issue, and also if they can get both of these cars back out again.
Yeah.
Because obviously they've got to diagnose what it is first. But yeah, you're right, 22 cars obviously got its... I don't know if the engine's running, but it's certainly got its lights back working again. The 38 doesn't appear to be.
Yeah.
Although it's difficult to tell with the headlights as they come down into 10A, the headlights shining through the side. They've stopped there. They've stopped towing them back on the inside on the of 10B.
Yeah,
the train go through, which is sensible because obviously the pits, they're coming into the pits. They can't be towing cars into the pits when other cars are coming in because it's literally so narrow you cannot get one car past the other coming down into pit lane at Petit.
Notice the Faf car had a headlight out when it came in, but I think that was just when it was on the pit lane speed limiter. That's come back on. Shea Adam, you've got the GT field, GT Le Mans, and those of GTD who feel the need.
Faf is the one-eyed monster when it comes into the pit lane, John. You are correct about that. It's been doing that all week long. I've got the heart of racing Aston Martin, and there is a driver change there. Ross Gunn is out, and it is Roman De Angelis back in. We've also got fuel and tires, sticker tires for the 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche, and sticker tires for the 12 Lexus as well. So not yet using the scuffed in rubber. A very soft landing back down for the Wright Motorsport Porsches. They're doing a bit of work to the rear wing. It looks like they're actually changing the angle a bit. So perhaps Jan Halen, we know he's a madman, perhaps he actually wants some wing out to try and find a little bit more speed. The rest of the cars have already vacated the pit lane, but this looks like it is a bit of strategy going on for Wright.
Note from Alex Brundle. Hello, AB. Hope you're fitting well, mate. Know you're working this weekend down at Biggin Hill for Formula One. He says, just point out that LMP3 cars don't often run in the dark, and maybe the internal lights and the night lights is putting a slightly larger load on the electrical systems. Good point, Alex, thank you. And loving your work, by the way. Keep it up. Missing you in the RSL commentary booth. Missing you behind the wheel of a racing car as well. Shame you couldn't be here and have a drive, but congratulations to Alex in getting his ride sorted out for the next couple of seasons with Inter-Europol. Announced a few weeks ago. Well done, mate. Absolutely deserved for you. At IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch, any other racing drivers want to have a pop at Johnny Morelum for cursing them out on the track and things like that.
Well, let's wait and see what happens in 3 hours, 51 minutes. Yeah, you could and 23 look very seconds.
Good. You could look very good indeed. Very good indeed.
I was getting a bit bored. I thought I'd throw it out there. And I actually do think that they've got some really good pace there.
You know, if you're the win now, you'll have people asking us in future broadcasts to get you back on to say, "I think it's XXX dear." You know that'll be. You know how superstitious some people are. No doubt. All right, coming down to, 3 hours, 50 minutes to go. Jeremy Shaw, Johnny Morelum, and me, John Hindhoff, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Let's just recap our Porsche keys to the race. We're in the dark now, and one of our keys to the race was be fast in the dark. You want a car that's going to run well in the cooler conditions. It is now exceptionally cool as the prototype class split is going on. Points for the Michelin Endurance Challenge. We're a couple of hours or so away still from the next tranche of those. We haven't seen a lot of patience at times. It's been a little bit more hectic than perhaps we would have expected from drivers of the calibre we've seen. but there's a lot on the line, so we understand. One or two people have flirted with the dirt, and it's caused them problems. But the biggest things, 10 degrees Celsius out there at the moment, as the number two United Autosport car, unsurprisingly, has gone behind the wall. Biggest thing, Jeremy, has been the temperatures for the tyres. And we've seen consistently people struggling, particularly on their outlap. We're used to that at Daytona in January for the Rolex 24. It's been just as significant here at Motul Petit Le Mans, a month or so later than we would normally be. That outlap is a real, real nasty time for the drivers, Jeremy.
Well, it really is, and particularly now with the temperatures being so chilly today, that's going to be, it's only going to get worse as this evening goes along. We've still got nearly 4 hours remaining in this race, so a whole bunch more pit stops for all of these contenders. And it's always coming out of the pits, as Johnny Mollum pointed out a while ago. For those of you who are familiar with other racing worldwide but not here, no artificial warming of the tyres. That's all down to what the drivers can do behind the wheel of these cars. So then they go out of the pit, stone cold tyres, and they've got to build that heat and temperature and pressures into that Michelin rubber before they get to full speed again.
I wonder, Johnny, we've just seen the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini come in and change rear tyres only. Now, that's not because they're short of fronts. Presumably, that's to keep the heat in the fronts. As you said earlier, it's much easier to get heat in the rears by just accelerating hard, doing a burnout out of the pit lane or wherever. But yeah. the fronts, obviously, are taking more time to come in.
Well, it's not so much they take more time. You just not as easy to generate heat in them because you're only doing it really through cornering or braking, and it's much, much harder, and especially if you're going out onto a yellow flag situation like this.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And also, if you've got a balance and you've tried, you need to try this to make sure it works. But quite often, you'll end up with so much understeer in the car when the tyres are cold because the rears heat up first.
Yeah.
So when you put new tyres on any car, it tends to go towards understeer. So by sometimes, even in a qualifying situation, you can actually do a situation where you put a new set of tyres on, come in, just put new rears on, and then you've got the balance quicker when the rear grip is higher. And you can actually, depending on the balance of your car, actually do a quicker lap time like that with scrub fronts and new rears. In this situation where you've got tyre temp as well, then that could even be, you can get the best of both worlds.
Okay, interesting.
It's not a bad way of doing it.
Right.
It's the front tyre temp which can be effectively the most difficult to handle in terms of braking and turning.
So Johnny Mollum joining us in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Your questions for him at IMSA Radio. And don't forget, we've got Michelin post-race tech. We'll wrap up what we've seen today and this week and indeed this season. If you've got any observations, points arising about this race of the year, then drop them on a tweet to us at IMSA Radio. Use the hashtag MichelinPRT for our final post-race tech of the year. And whilst we've got a moment or two, our plan is to cover the 24-hour race at Sebring next weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, over on RS1. We'll have sound and vision, all three. No blocks
of
grid.
Of
I know, tell
I
me about
imagine.
It.
I can't imagine.
I haven't got a dental plan that's good enough for that.
I used to struggle with 12 hours of Sebring, thinking that was harder than 24 hours of Le Mans, for example. 24 hours
and,
of Sebring.
And no break in the middle either. It's 24 hours straight through. The 24-hour races that the long races that Krennic have done in the States in the past have had a break in the middle. So going back to green flag racing. 3 hours 46 to go. Just heard Shea telling me someone's gone behind the wall. I think it was the performance tech number 38, Rasmus Lindkarl. Yes, it was. Felipe Nasser leads away then for the number 31, red and white, if you can see it out in the darkness, Whelan Cadillac, and he's got a good jump on everybody else. It's Dane Cameron back behind the wheel of the MSR number 60. In second, and then Earl Bamber still in that car. He's done a cracking job. He didn't think he was driving this morning.
And now he's 2.1 seconds off the lead.
And he has led.
And he has led as well.
He has led, yeah. He's done He's already done 2.25 hours in that car, Johnny. So he's, you know, he's getting very valuable experience in competition terms for the Raw, which has a competitive element now at the start of next year, and then for the Rolex 24. Different circuit, I know, different.
Yeah.
Very, but there's nothing better than sitting in a car competitively, is there?
No, he is indeed, but he won't be thinking about that. He'll just be thinking about trying to win Petit Le Mans, which will be one of those crazy stories. And on board there, going down into 10A, the Porsche getting around the outside there and then of the number 4 Corvette, but the Corvette cutting a better traction out of 10B and then ducking underneath as they came over the bridge down into 12 and taking the position straight back again.
Yeah, that's great driving by both. And that is the battle for the lead in GT.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
LM.
That was very good, very respectful between the two drivers there. That was really, really nice driving.
It's kind of what you would expect from Alexander Sims and from
Matt Campbell, yes,
yeah.
In the Porsche, yeah.
Matt Campbell, what a...
Yeah, fantastic young driver. Oh. I remember watching him in WEC last year when we were doing that, and he was really impressive in the Porsche, really good.
Came through Porsche Cup in Australia as well.
Tell you what, Porsche Cup made a few people along the way. Porsche Cup has.
That must be you as well.
Most competitive series I ever raced in.
Yeah. Yeah, and you won every single race the year you won it here in the UK, didn't you?
Oh, you're making me blush.
Of course, the competition wasn't like it is now. But, that's a record. I think that's a record.
Actually, you're right.
Not true at all. That's a record that still stands, by the way. Nobody's won all the races in a season. I think the amount of races in Carrera Cup GP was extended, and I think Tim Harvey still holds the record for the actual finite number of races won in a season, and he only just hung on to that this year. Ironically, from a driver that he manages. So he was getting a bit worried towards the end of the season. So he said, I'm going to have to work harder to get my touring car driver for next year. But the point we're trying to make is, you know, it is a global formula, Porsche Carrera Cup. Everybody's racing the same car. They're all on the same tyres. And therefore, if you look at people, number one, you can transplant people into different series. And number two, if you look at people, you get an idea of the overall ability and quality of the guys out there.
And what Porsche are doing effectively is giving an opportunity to young drivers who may not have a lot of budget but have a lot of talent to actually have an opportunity to become a professional sports car racer. So the pool of talent of young drivers that they're able to pick from is vast, which is why you end up, especially if you think now that they've got Porsche Cup Series all over the world, so they're able to really cherry pick the best young drivers out there, bring them on board, and almost have like a Red Bull type program where they can really push them through, and they are all, to a man, incredibly quick drivers.
And for the first time this year here in the United States, Porsche Carrera Cup. We've had GT Challengers in the past, but the new 992 Cup car and the change to Michelin as the tyre supplier, the outgoing head of Porsche Motorsport North America, Dr. Daniel Ambruster, who finishes his tenure at the end of this year. And it's Dr. Vollmeier who will be taking over. Effectively, he's already working alongside Dr. Ambruster, but he takes over 1st of Jan next year. But Daniel Ambruster pushing really hard to get that Carrera Cup North America, and we crowned our first overall pro champion here, and that was Sebastian Prio.
I was just about to say we need to give Seb Prio a shout out, because he came over here. It's difficult to learn the tracks, not a car necessarily he was used to, and the Porsches have a black art to driving Porsches, and Seb Prio did a fantastic job to wrap the championship actually with one race still to go. So really chuffed for him. He's got a bright future in front of him.
We had three very, very impressive drivers, any of whom would have been worthy winners. And frankly, in any other year, any one of them could have been
That's what made Seb's win more impressive.
I agree. Really, Kai van Berlo from the Netherlands,
absolutely.
And Parker Thompson, albeit Parker slightly less experienced in GT cars, but he'd been working his way up the road to Indy before committing full-time, the Canadian driver. Any of those three, we wait to find out. It's not necessarily the guy that wins that gets nominated to go, so we wait to find out. But any of those three, if they get nominated, they'll give a good account of themselves in the European runoffs.
Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah. And Pat Long, of course, was the last US driver back in, oh, he's not going to like me for this, I think it was 2002 that he was the Porsche Junior selection, and that set him on a road that took him right up to and including Porsche prototype racing, of course, and he's racing in his final pro race, so he says. I suspect we'll still see him driving old Porsches. He tends to like the air-cooled, oil-cooled cars. He's one of the driving forces behind the global sensation that is the Luftgekühlt festivals for the older cars.
Just the thing is, and I know this from my own experience, it's the joy of driving for everyone, and Pat Long being the poster boy for Porsche, especially Porsche North America, for so long, did a phenomenal job. I remember him arriving in the paddock. He looked like he was about 12 when he first arrived. As you see, that's an LMP3 going, that's again, that 74 car going straight at 10A.
That's the second place car. That was Scott Andrews. In fact, that was the leading car at the time.
There's a spinner number 54 in the
right in the middle of the track at... The coming out of turn 7, I think that is. Yes,
so
it
that's
is.
That's the core Autosport car.
That's the 54, which...
Is it Bennett at the wheel?
No, it isn't, actually. It is... Let me see. It is George Kurtz at the wheel of that car. But I've got a feeling that Scott Andrew was leading before that little off. He's 3 seconds behind Spencer Pigott now in the Junior 3 racing car. And
didn't look like he would have lost a lot of time there, maybe 3-4 seconds.
Jeremy has the lap chart, so he'll be able to tell me whether Scott was leading in the 74, the Riley 74 Ranch car, when he went grass tracking at turn 10.
Yeah, he was indeed leading. He had been leading for quite a long time.
Yeah, I remember doing an update and thinking, oh, well, they've done well. So Spencer Pigott, you don't want to give Spencer Pigott any encouragement, Jeremy. Takes the lead. You drive off the road, let him take the lead. You absolutely don't want to give him that kind of opportunity, do you?
Well, no. Particularly Spencer, he drove a Riley car at Daytona, so he knows how that team works.
Yeah.
So he's now driving for the Junior 3 racing operation, car number 30. So back into the lead of the race for that car, ahead of Scott Andrews with that... that spin there for Scott. Another couple of notes. A new fastest lap of the race was set by Felipe Nasr 2 laps ago, 1:09.32. The lap record, the race lap record, by the way, was a 1:08.8, also set by Felipe Nasr back in 2019. So he's flying along there. Super battle going on in LMP2 right now with Tristan Nunez. Of course, he's going to be driving for the Axel Express team next year, number 31 car. He leads for win order sport a car number 11, narrowly over Gabriel Aubry and Scott Huffaker, who's driving number 52 car in third place. Now, a trivia question here. What tribute Tristan Nunez, Scott Huffaker, have you got?
Go on.
Both winners of the Walter Hayes Trophy.
Ah, very good, very good. Going to nip down to Shea, who's got Pipo Durrani before he jumps into the car. Shea?
The only way to get warm in the conditions as they are right now is to get in the race car, isn't it? How much longer before you're back in?
Yeah, it is. It's unusual cold here to this evening, but it makes it interesting, you know, to warm up the tires and so on. I don't know exactly how long till I get in the car, but hopefully soon, so I can get myself warm. And over half of the race gone already. So we're heading to the last third of the race, so we'll see how it goes.
How are the nerves when you're fighting for a championship, but you're watching from a pit box?
Not thinking about it. It's just another race.
I love it. Good luck, Pipo.
Yeah, he had to run away there because he was jumping into the car. Pipo Durrani never gives less than 100% every time he gets in the car. I think sometimes the team find it difficult to dial him back. He's one of those drivers who just wants to run flat out all the time. Super aggressive, super quick driver.
Yeah, fantastic. And obviously burst onto the scene, didn't he, a few years ago with the ESM car and started sort of winning Daytona and at one point, it seemed that every time he got in the car, he was winning, and that really sort of launched his top professional career in America, and he hasn't looked back since.
Yeah, very much so. Through to the completion of another lap in about 5 seconds' time for Felipe Nasr, teammate, two people to Rani.
A little short shift there, I noticed, through 12. Just a little short shift. They've been hanging onto the gear until they were almost to the start-finish line for the upshift. Short shifted a little bit there, probably because he had a bit of traffic in front of him. But, again, just looking like he's got a really nice rhythm, just on board, nothing too dramatic, looking really good.
And Philippe Nasr, about halfway through his stint at the moment, people getting ready, standing by to get in the car. He'll get ready a little bit early just in case anything happens. Once you get to about halfway through the stint, Johnny, if there's a full course yellow, you'll take the opportunity to come in, so the driver, even if he's not fully suited and booted, he'll be getting himself into the zone, making sure he knows where his gloves and his earplugs are and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. You've got your little routines that you do, just to sort of, you could call it almost superstition, but actually it's more a routine thing, just to get yourself into that right frame of mind, that little focus that you need to get into the car. And I love it when you go on board with cars now and watching you coming up, especially behind LMP3 cars, sometimes LMP2s, and you can see their rear tyres, because the cheese has gone or the rear deck's gone, and you know, okay, that car had a puncture, you know, a few hours ago that ripped the right rear off or whatever. It's just like you're coming up to cars that are still operating at racing speed, but you can just tell as you come up to them that very few of them are looking completely ship-shape and intact compared to how they actually started the race.
Yeah, and that is the joy that is long-distance endurance racing. If you are just joining us at coming up to 20 minutes before 7 Eastern, thanks for giving us some of your time this Saturday night. We've got 3 hours, 33 minutes, and if I wait for 5 seconds, 33 seconds to go as we are counting down.
Just,
this place in daylight is beautiful. This place in darkness is just absolutely phenomenal.
Really gives you a sensation of speed, didn't it, then, when we were following down through 3, 5, 6, up over the top as you come down towards 6, braking for 7. Just beautiful onboard shots of the Konica Minolta car. Back on board with the leader, number 31, ducking down the inside of a P3 car into 12, still flat through 12. You can see the dark rubber marks that come up towards you. It's funny how in the darkness the headlights really pick out those dark
certain
rubber marks
things,
and everything,
yeah.
And you can actually really register, and you just begin to feel at one with the car. There's nothing nicer than driving at night when you're feeling like you've got a real rhythm going.
I love driving at night. I love racing at night as well. And I know it's sometimes difficult. It was one of the drivers earlier on was saying you don't know what the lights are because they're just bright and white. You know it's not a GT... it's not a GTD car because it's not yellow lights, but if it's white, it could be a prototype, it could be I know, but even with that, there's something almost pure about it, Johnny. And for me, I don't drive enough by any stretch of the imagination, but in some ways there's fewer distractions for me, because what I can see and what I'm concentrating on is the bit I need to be concentrating on, and I find that actually focuses me better.
Yeah, well, you're kind of tunnel visioned, aren't you?
Yes, so, absolutely. Yeah. I think it probably comes from the dark, for me, being from the dark northeast, and, you know, half the year spent in complete darkness in my rallying routes back in the day. Jeremy, GTD, the Vassa number 12 Lexus, the remaining Lexus, ahead by just 4 seconds of the Aston Martin, the Hartnett Racing car, and then the Pfaff car going for the championship in third position. Still plenty of racing to go on in GTD, and the top, six or so, still right in the hunt.
Yeah, it was 5, and it's now 6, because Andy Lally, during that last Porsche caution period, got that Magnus with Archangel Acura back onto the lead lap. So he's in that mix now. We've had, over the last few stints, the Aston Martin led pretty handily for a little while. Then through the last stint, the 28 car was out in front for a good time. The Allegro Motorsports car with Daniel Boed at the wheel. He's handed over that car now to Daniel Yucadela. As you say, it's Zach Veach, who's shown really, really good pace in that number 12 Lexus, who leads right now. And he's, as suggested, extended a little bit of a lead over the Andrus in the heart of racing Aston.
Roman De Angelis really coming of age. Jeremy, we followed his progress through the previous iteration of Porsche racing on the IMSA schedule, and put himself out there, attracted some attention clearly has a lot of talent, and he's translated through into the Big Show here very well indeed.
Yeah, he has. And you know, he and Ross Gunn have been a super little partnership there. They get along really, really well together. Two very talented young guys, and you know, they've already won the Sprint Cup Championship for Aston Martin and Harter Racing this year. And you know, they were in contention to win the overall championship. I don't think that's possible now, but they're still. It's been a great season for that team.
It's Jeremy Shaw keeping an eye on about a million different things at the moment. Johnny Morlam with us this weekend as well in the Hackney Global Broadcast Centre. I was talking about the 24 Hours at Sebring earlier on. That's got IMSA involvement. They've been instrumental in getting that race on with Kreventnik, the Dutch company who do the 24 Hour Series in Europe and the rest of the world. And it's a great collaboration. As I say, we'll have that for you in its entirety next weekend. And then on the Tuesday following that, the final Haggerty Show of the weekend, we'll get some of the luminaries from this race, from the season and from Sebring together in vision for our final Haggerty Show of the year. And the responsible adult, who's very good at wrangling top quality guests, remember we had Zach Brown straight after Le Mans, we've had Brendan Hartley straight after Le Mans giving us some wonderful insight into what's been going on for Toyota. Mike Conway's been with us. Well, we've got some really decent guests beginning to come together for that show. That's not this Tuesday, but the following Tuesday. So after the final long distance race of the weekend, another one of our Haggerty video presentations, and that will be on the Haggerty pages there. Haggerty Live pages on the World Wide Web. We'll tweet it all long before that. Try and join us for that if you can, a week on Tuesday.
Felipe Nasr is absolutely flying, John. He's just popped in another 9.8 on that. Having said that, he did a 13.1 on the very last lap, but before that was a 9.8. It's only like half a second off of his fastest lap of the race.
And he has to, Jeremy, doesn't he? Because it's closing up behind him.
It is. The top four cars coming by 2.5 seconds as they crossed the time lap, but you know, crossed the line last time around. So the pace is really, really hot here. You know, traffic, of course, interrupts that progress. Having just turned a 9, his last lap was a 13.1. So nearly 4 seconds lost on that last lap. And you know, those four, top four cars pretty much nose to tail at the moment. It is super tight. In LMP2, it's pretty much the same car, same there. Tristan Nunez leads Scott Huffaker by less than a second. In LMP3, Spencer Piggott, another Team USA scholarship winner, leads Scott Andrews by less than a second as well. It's absolutely incredible, really, how close all of the classes are right now.
And you saw Scott Andrews there sort of coming up into two and locking his unloaded right front as he turned into two and almost going off on the grass in the 74 LMP3 there, dropping a little bit further back. But he's pushing clearly to try and catch Spencer Piggott in the 30 car to try and make up for the mistake that he made about breaking himself down into 10A where he lost the lead.
Not sure what Alexander Orkin's been doing until now, but he's just joined us on the international video stream, which you can get onto free and without any breaks. We'll be going all the way through the next 3.5 hours on imsaradio.com. Hit the live video button. If you're in the US and you want to just hear the audio, take us with you, then hit the listen live button and select RS2. Hello, Alex. Nice to know that you are tuned in. Sven says, I was checking the spotter guide this morning. Didn't see old Bamba next to the 01 car. Was it a last-minute addition? You know, you're absolutely right, Sven. His name wasn't next to that. It will be next year. But Kevin Magnussen, for whom this was to be his last race for the team, of course, before he moves on to Peugeot and their LMH, their hypercar programme next year. Kevin not feeling well at all this morning. Earl was here supporting the team. They've been doing some testing. Earl's in that team next year as one of the four substantive drivers for two Chip Ganassi Cadillacs, and therefore he was in prime position to step into the breach for Kevin. There was a little bit of a joke. I've got a feeling Earl Bamba has tacked a Swedish flag onto his driving suit just to give due credit to the man he's replacing, which is a nice little touch.
Well, it would be Danish, not Swedish.
Danish, yes.
But
thank you.
I'm sure that...
you knew what I meant. Thank you. Why did I say Swedish? Thank you.
It is quarter to midnight.
Somewhere. Yeah. They're not in Sweden, indeed Denmark.
That's true.
Hello to our Scandinavian listeners. I know that we have plenty of people tuned in from there. Thank you for your support. So, Sven, you're absolutely right. Earl Bamber, super sub this weekend. Philippe Albuquerque just tweeted in. Say whatever you want. This is the most entertaining race in the world. I love Petit Le Mans. You're missing this now, Morlam, aren't you?
Oh, God. I didn't think I was. I just came up here to help you out and enjoy the company and call the race. And then as soon as they first went on board with, I can't remember who it was, I think it was probably the number 10 Konica Minolta car, and I was just like, I didn't realise, I just literally got a pang of nostalgia. So it was, but I do miss it. Sometimes I just think, oh, thank God I'm in the warm, out of the way when you watch some races. But this, I would love
what is it about there. This race then that there's a few races that pro drivers
I just love
keep asking
track.
Me about.
I just love this track. Yeah. I mean, I like Sebring, but Sebring beats you up.
Yeah.
You know, but this track, there's just something about it. I like the fact that it's a short track. I like the fact that you're coming around every time to try and better your lap time. You come around every 1:10 and you think, right now, try and attack again. Try and better that last lap or whatever. I love the traffic situation here. For some reason, for me, I just find the rhythm of Petit Le Mans just really works at this track. But having said that, people say to me, what was the most difficult track you ever first went to have to learn? It was this, because it's so difficult to actually get coming out of one, up over the top into two. You can't see the turn in for three. No. You come up over the top, turning left, and knowing where you're going to turn right. It's way more difficult than, say, the Corkscrew at Laguna, something that all these famous corners that people are saying are so difficult. I actually found Road Atlanta probably the toughest track I ever had to learn.
The questions that I get asked by pro drivers about tracks that I've been fortunate enough to go to, sometimes drive around in street cars or even sometimes in race cars, Road Atlanta, Bathurst. Is Bathurst really as good as what you're seeing? I've had so many pro drivers down through the years say that, and I say, no, it's actually better.
Yeah.
And now haven't driven Bathurst in the dark.
See, I've not driven Bathurst, and that's on my bucket list to do. Even if I do it in a 2CV, I want to do it, because I've been told exactly the same.
It's outrageous.
That is one of the tracks everyone says is amazing.
Fortunately, being part of the organisation, I've got to do quite a few laps around there, and I took an old V8 supercar around there a few years ago on the Monday after the race and had half a dozen laps just to see what it was like, and that was a lot of fun. And then a couple of years later took a GT3 a 991.2 GT3 around there in the dark, and of course the race stopped. Nowhere else in the world other than Australia would you have a race that starts in the dark, but you never have any darkness practice. So if you're starting the car and you've not been there before, you've never driven it in the dark, and the first time you see it is on the... What happens is, as soon as you roll on the formation lap, the counter starts, the time starts. Mm. So you're behind the safety car for the first lap, and that would be the first time you've seen the track in the dark. unless you've got the special pass that gets you onto the track like we have, to do a couple of laps in the middle of the night.
That's nuts.
But it's brilliant.
I didn't know that, yeah.
But the rhythm of that track... I know what you're talking about that. The rhythm of that track, when I first drove it in the dark, it was actually, again, it was that thing where you go, oh, yeah, this makes perfect sense. I know where I am. I know when I'm turning in here for the dipper, and over the top of Skyline. And it's the rhythm of your gear changes and stuff like that, isn't it? You know, all right, down one, down another one, turn in, throttle, short shift. You know, what you're telling... I commentate to myself in my head when I'm learning a racetrack, so that I get that feeling of the rhythm of it. And when it's in the dark, you just do the same thing. You've got to do Bathurst. I'll do Bathurst with you.
You're going to pay for it.
All right, hey, if we drop the 98 million on the Euro Millions next week.
Okay.
Almost certainly.
You're on.
You mean, are you going to pay for it? How much are you going to pay me for driving with you?
What, to coach me there? Because obviously you've done it, driven at night. That would work. Maybe Jeremy could find us a sponsor.
Well, Jeremy's very good.
He could be our team manager.
Yeah. Jeremy is our team manager. I don't think I'd like to be managed by Jeremy. I think he'd be too harsh.
I'm going to come drive the damn thing with you guys.
Well, that's...
Here we go. There we go.
Jeremy's doing more racing than either of us, actually. You're still driving that Miata, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm supposed to do a race next weekend, actually, but I can't, unfortunately, which is rather irritating. I actually haven't driven it for a couple of years, but
You were supposed to do it next weekend, and damn it, I can't.
See, we're all just... Shay
can be team manager.
Shay would be a very good team manager.
She'd
She's
be
very
super organised.
Process driven.
Everything. Absolutely.
All the stats.
And, you know, what time you have to turn up, when you're getting in the car.
What
I can
shirt
just
you
imagine.
Have to wear.
Absolutely. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, very good. Responsible adult in training, Shay Adam, as she is in the RSL crew. All right, 3 hours, 20 minutes to go. And we're coming up to 7 o'clock at night. We've had about an hour of full darkness now. So anybody who was in before that, they've seen through the twilight hours and into the darkness. Next driver that gets in is probably going to be getting their first taste of darkness. Somebody way off to the left-hand side where was that? That was at the top of the hill.
That must have been
outside of turn one and two.
That was literally turning into two. He was on the left as you're turning into two, going off to that bit that goes. Is there like another area they use for bikes sometimes off to the left?
So that
there.
Was somebody off the circuit there. But no harm, no foul. So 55 is Harry Tinknell. He's carving his way through traffic, heading up to
turn seven
now. And pits are closed. Well, that's because there's somebody off at turn one.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can work out who that was. It's being full course yellow. The flashing lights are out as Tinknell had just caught up with the Cadillac number 01. That's the car ahead of him. So someone is off the circuit. I can't see. Let me see if I can very quickly find out if somebody has stopped so I get slightly more information. No. On one of the other screens. That didn't work. They'll normally pop up with a little red S.
There we go.
It's a prototype. And it's a prototype that is steaming. And the driver is walking away from it. But that's not in the early part of the track, I don't think. That
looks like it's going down to 10A, that car.
Yeah,
right,
I think so. So another unrelated incident. Indicator left on, right hand indicator left on, and that is just over the top of the brow from 7 through to 8 to 9, the two little kinks.
But I don't think that's the reason for the yellow. I think the reason for the yellow was the car on the outside heading up from exit of turn 1 going down towards turn 2.
Let's have a squidge through the... It is the Wynn Autosport LMP3 car that has stopped. That is the number 83
So again,
car.
Is that a full shutdown again? Is that the third one?
Josh Skelton, British driver. One of the young British drivers in that car.
Although his indicator's working.
His indicator's working and it's smoking.
Yeah.
Now,
so
is that's steam?
Not, yeah, that's not a similar problem, is it? I noticed going back to the problems that we were seeing from the United Autosport car and the 38 Performance Tech car, John, that they were both still in the pit, sort of 20 laps down. So whatever that problem was, it just stopped them dead in their tracks. Clearly not a quick fix.
Yeah. Nice use of the LED lights over the top of the cockpit on that car. And... that has just ground to a halt. Still had electrical... there's a little fire at the back. So there has been a little fire at the back and Josh deciding to do the sensible thing and bail out of that car. Not sure whether his team were talking to him or somebody had passed on the
message.
I'd
have put it on the grass there, actually, to be honest.
Well, one of the things... another good thing to have on your mental tick list is where the fire stations are and the extinguishers are around the track.
Yeah,
hopefully you won't have to
on the straight down to at any point you can use any part of that straight if you're overtaking cars three abreast, four abreast. So that was super dangerous. Should have maybe put it on the grass.
Let's see if we can use this time productively. Shea Adam is searching and indeed has found an interview for us. Matt Bell down in the pit lane, Shea.
Matt, I'm so sorry to find you when your car is parked out on the side of the track like this. You guys think you know what it is?
It appears to be a drive shaft failure, unfortunately. We had a great start of the race. Young Josh did a brilliant first stint, got us up to second in class. We got Naveen in under the full course yellow. And then at one of the full course yellow periods, we got hit in the rear quite hard. We lost three laps fixing damage, and the legacy of that impact has been giving us problems ever since. And it would appear that this is another problem stemming from that contact. So it's been a pretty crazy race. There's been a lot of contact out there, which has been unacceptable at this level. And yeah, that's we're another casualty of it, unfortunately.
Well, it was good to see you at least, my friend.
I love being back. Hope to be back again.
Originally from Newcastle.
But you won't hold that against him?
I always do, him and his brother. They never let me forget the fact I'm from Sunderland, and the soccer rivalry spills over into everything we talk about.
I'm surprised you brought soccer up in Sunderland.
Well, you can't pick your team, mate.
I wasn't going to say a word.
Can't pick your team. Matt Bell, the taller, and he's passed a piece of paper to me to say the taller, better looking and faster of the Bell brothers. There.
I think Rob might have something to disagree with on that last point.
Rob Bell, still a McLaren driver, I think, Rob, isn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah, a development driver and factory driver. The two Bell boys.
I was a bit surprised not to see him drafted into the number 70 car, to be honest.
Yeah, the Inception car, the Optimum car, yeah. Interesting. There's a huge McLaren, one of the McLaren Pure McLaren event at Circuit of the Americas. I think it might be this weekend, actually. And I know there's a big effort to get that sorted out, and there's a lot of McLaren personnel gone on there. They're very professionally run. I've seen those at close quarters. Ah, it's the right weekend, of course, because they were there 4 years ago when we were racing the Kreventic weekend. They'd been there early in the week, so I think they've been over there. It must be a traditional date for them.
They do run them very well. I went over there with Bonamy Grimes when we were to get some Bahrain knowledge before we did the World Endurance Championship race there about a couple of years ago, and we did the Pure McLaren event as a way of actually gaining track time in the GT4 McLaren, and the event is run beautifully. They do a really good job of it.
No, nothing done by half measures, as you might imagine from a brand like that. A lot of familiar faces, including Rob Bell. Warren Hughes is involved.
Oh, every time. Well, Johnny Kane was one of the people working with one of my clients doing instructing. I mean, I walked down the pit lane, I could see, you know, I pretty much knew every single instructor. It's quite comforting, really. They had some real top-level instructors working for them.
Yeah, and they've been there. I'm pretty certain now I've said that they've been there this week. Shay, we're open for prototypes, open for business, and we have some takers.
We do. A bunch of bright white lights coming down the pit lane. Remember, we were talking to Pippo Durrani a few minutes ago, and he said he needed to go put his helmet on. Well, this is exactly why Whelan Engineering Cadillac into the pits, as well as pretty much all of the other DPIs. In LMP2 world, we've got fuel and tires and a drinks bottle change, as well as a driver change. Mikkel Jensen getting back aboard the 52 PR1 Matheson Motorsport prototype for the Wynn Autosport, the non-stopped out on track one, so the LMP2. That is fuel only for Tristan Nunez. Oh, no, wait, they're given to Michelin's as well. Tower Motorsport is doing fuel and tires, but that is James French staying aboard. Fires the car back up into lake, just waiting for the fuel. All of the LMP2 cars still in their boxes. There goes James French. He's going to get out ahead of the other two. Second car to move is the number 11, Wynn Autosport. And the last car off the pit lane in LMP2 will be the 52 PR1 Matheson Motorsports.
Just as hectic in pit lane. And I'm reminded now why we don't allow Jeremy all the cars to come in at once. It's a dramatic ballet in daylight. And again, so close to disaster when cars are pulling in around guys working on the front of tyres. It looks dramatic, Jeremy, in the daylight, in the darkness, just lit by the overhead lamps on the gantries. My goodness me. It's hard work down there for those guys, lifting a wheel and tyre that is effectively the same, lifting with one hand a wheel and tyre. That's about the same weight as your checked baggage, about 23 kilos. That, Jeremy, and it's a rough place to work for those guys down there.
I'll tell you one thing, John, though, that we've seen two near misses there for the front left-hand corner guy. They need to do something about that, because the next time third time he might get nailed and he's got a broken leg. It's too close. I don't know the pit stall further down if he absolutely has to come in at that shallow an angle in order to be able to stop in his own pit box. But to me, I couldn't see. It looked like a dark blue car. I didn't think it was a Konica Minolta car, but maybe Shea can tell us better coming around the Whelan car. But it's too close to that, and we've seen one, there was a slight contact there was nearly contact. You don't want to just keep letting it happen until the guy gets a broken leg and is lying in the pit lane. So they need to do something. The marshals in the pit lane need to go and have a word there and make sure he comes in at a slightly steeper angle, leaves it a little bit later, turns in a bit more aggressively and turns in a little bit later, because that's an accident waiting to happen.
I agree, Johnny. And it was Kamui Kobayashi, I think, who was driving the car at that time, that almost clipped the other guy. Of course, he's used to driving the World Endurance Championship for the Toyota team, which is always pitted, isn't it, at the very beginning of pit lane. So that's never an issue for him.
But then I don't know if it was him in the car, Jeremy.
Was it both times it was him?
Okay, so somebody needs to say something, because I would hate to see that poor mechanic get absolutely obliterated, and it will be pretty bad.
I'm told by Greystone GT there is a pure McLaren event at Côte d'Azur. I knew I wasn't going senile. And they've just won the GT4 race, the first ever race win by Ian Campbell, who's coached by Ollie Webb. Ian, well done in that. Did think that was running this weekend. Ian McCarthy says, I wouldn't alter the format of either race for the world. I'd dearly love to see Sunrise Racing at Road Atlanta or Bathurst one day. If only we knew a Dutch organiser who could pull it off. There's no spare dates at Bathurst. They're only allowed 6 events in the year. And the Bathurst 12 Hours starts in the dark and runs through the sunrise. It is the most spectacular thing. Worth getting up at 3:30 in the morning just to be a part of that. And normally we take a house down there, and I do the cooking, take some breakfast in for the team, and we get there, get ourselves established, and then wait for the race to start. It's around about the first half an hour, 40 minutes in the dark, and then the sun comes up. Oh, absolutely stunning. So, Ian, yes, worth a trip down there. Absolutely. Absolutely. So Nikolai says, the reason for the close calls in the pits, the high number of entries this year. More cars equals smaller boxes. 43 cars is not the most that we've had, and it's not the maximum here. You've got to think about how they are split in classes on that, and who comes in at the same time. Shea Adam, what's that? You normally have all the stats on how big the pit boxes are.
It's not that the boxes are any smaller this year. As a matter of fact, we have 8 unoccupied boxes on the WeatherTech side of the pit lane, so that is not what's contributing to this issue that we're seeing on screen. And by the way, Johnny Mullum is completely correct. It would be the 10 cutting in front of the 31 Whelan Engineering Cadillac. Yes. While we've got a moment, while we've got a yellow flag, Mr. John Doonan, how lovely it is to see you trackside once again. Have you gotten to enjoy much of this race?
Well, it's been an extremely busy weekend and week here, Shay, but I do look forward to trying to watch the last bit of the 2021 season. So thrilled with the turnout here, the amazing weather we were blessed with today, and the fact that so many of the championship battles are coming down to this last race.
It's been a wonderful season, not only in this series, but in all the support series as well, with the championships coming down to the end of the season. You've been a part of all these banquets so far. The champions that you've seen, do you think we're going to see them in this series one day?
There's no question that in our strategy, we've thought about those challenge series. Porsche Carrera Cup that's launched here for the first time in North America. Certainly Michelin Pilot Challenge, Prototype Challenge, Mazda MX-5 Cup. It's clear that they have been pipelines in the past, and I think more and more you're seeing young talent rising to the top, and there's no doubt that you'll see them in the WeatherTech Championship down the road.
There's a bit more normalcy for the calendar next year. Things going back, us not being here in November and needing multiple layers. How excited are you for next season of IMSA?
But I keep telling everyone this is like a summer day in Chicago. So we need to get everybody to put on their warm clothes tonight. But yeah, we're feeling normal. When I drove in here to Motul Petit Le Mans, it felt normal. And clearly the audience that we have here on site today is remarkable. We're going to have a pretty normal schedule next year in terms of the cadence of the races. An absolutely great announcement this week with additional television broadcasts on network from NBC, as well as the USA Network for the rest of the races. And then a Peacock flag-to-flag coverage digitally for all of the races.
That's fantastic. We've got a big car count here to end the season. We had a big car count at Daytona. Things looking like it's going to continue progressing on this line of momentum for next year?
Well, based on the conversations we're having and the announcements like BMW made today, we're feeling like there is going to be continued growth. Ultimately, it's the announcements that come from the automotive partners, from the race teams, that really solidify exactly what we're going to see. But there's no question the sport in general is on an upswing, and I would suggest IMSA and our form of endurance sports car racing is in for historic moments, not only next year, but for many years to come.
Well, of course, everyone's looking forward to 2023 with the introduction of the LMDH program. It's going to be a big, exciting thing coming into IMSA, but we can't forget the DPI. It's been such a wonderful stalwart for the series since 2017. Next year is going to be the farewell season. Is there going to be any sort of extra tributes to them?
Well, the DPI doesn't happen without the vision of Jim France and the strategy that IMSA laid out to allow automakers to run for the overall win in a cost-effective manner. Clearly, we're overjoyed with the commitments that have come for LMDH long-term to have Acura, to have Audi, to have BMW, Cadillac, Porsche, and others we believe will come is absolutely historic. I think we're going to see a period of endurance sports car racing that none of us have seen in our lifetime. Next year, I believe, is an appetizer, if you will, for what is to come. You're going to have the opportunity, I think, to see some of those cars that'll be with us in 2023 and beyond showcased at some of the 22 events while we finish off what's been an amazing 6 years of DPI racing. And clearly tonight, the men and women of the Action Express team and Wayne Taylor Racing are going to take it all the way down to the wire.
Now, you are first and foremost a sports car racing fan. It's been in your blood since birth. For people around the track tonight at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta and people around the world who are looking to get here one day, where would you like to be for the end of this race?
Well, definitely right above start-finish line. It's going to come down to that. It has the last several years come down to the last few stints or even few laps. So expect me to be in the Michelin Tower. It's a beautiful facility to overlook what's going to be an awesome finish.
John, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time.
Thank you.
Perfectly timed by Shea Adam for that VP Racing Fuel update as we go back to green with just on 3 hours to go. Let's see this opening lap or two as the guys get back up to speed. The 31 Cadillac Whelen engineering car again got a good jump, a second to the good over the line, and it really does seem that coming out of 10 here, Johnny, when you just get yourself straightened up, immediately get on the power, and of course the guy behind you probably still got a little bit of steering lock on, can't get on the throttle at the same time, no matter how close he is to you.
Well, that's the thing, you can always get the jump, and also don't forget that if you're following closely through 12 on cold tyres, you're probably having to breathe a little bit because you're getting a little bit of downforce through losing grip having followed someone that closely through 12, so that gives you a little bit of a better run out onto the straight. You've got Jonathan Bomarito now in the 55 Mazda, 1.5 seconds off the lead, but he's in second place, and Dane Cameron back in the car again, 6 tenths behind him. And it is a fantastic battle. It'll be interesting for Bomarito. These will be his first laps at night, so that he'll be getting his eye in, working out. Especially, I always found that coming through 2, 3, and down through the S's into 5, those are the most difficult area of the track at night to really just get that rhythm. It always took me 2 or 3 laps just to really find that groove.
And we've said about the headlights before, Johnny, but the whole character of the track changes because the big hit on the back of the... That's
just a love tap, John.
you wouldn't say that if you had to pay for the damage, would you? That was the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini that was tapped from behind from the... Is that the 42 Audi? I think it is.
Sounds like an Audi.
Yeah, it does. It has that sort of V10 whine. So the back of that part of the track. The nature of the track changes because the perspective flattens out in the dark. You don't see these things the same way. Down the inside for the second place car. And that is a new leader down into 10. That was from a long way back from Dane Cameron, Jeremy. But it was clean as you like down into 10.
It was the previous... He took the restart in third. The previous lap, he overtook Jonathan Bomarito. Now that great dive, clean dive down the inside there to take over the lead again for Dane Cameron. This is the 19th lead change in this race. Or 20th, actually, I think.
That was a beautiful move there. Dane Cameron clearly feeling much more comfortable that he's got his tyres up to temperature. And again, the more aggressive driver here, if you've got a slightly more aggressive turn in, the way you drive, the natural style, it can heat the tyres up, and it's clearly working for Dane in the 60 car.
So into the last third of the race. New leader, Mayashank Racing. And it is the number 60 of Dane Cameron who's just taken the lead and has stretched out to over a second from Pipo Durrani. Not exactly a slouch, but Pipo was caught napping there in the Whelan Engineering Cadillac. After that yellow flag, the top seven all on the lead lap and within 4 seconds at the front of the field. Tristan Nunes for Wind Autosport is leading in the LMP2 category. Riley and Scott Andrews back to the lead in the 74. Scott Andrews, remember, made a mistake and threw away that lead. Spencer Pigott, though, is now 1.3 seconds behind. It's BMW and Conor De Filippi in the 25 BMW that leads GTM. And in GT Daytona, it is Heart of Racing and Roman De Angelis who is leading with under 3 hours to go live from Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. This is Petit Le Mans 2021.